got a little bit of a time crunch today, so I'm going to ask everybody to be concise and brief with their comments so we don't have to come back tonight with a continuation of the committee work. Roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
Chair Sundin is present. Vice Chair Vang?
Present.
Representative Anderson?
Present.
Representative Burkle?
Present.
Representative Eklund?
Present.
Representative Hansen R?
Hansen R, present.
Representative Hansen J?
Hansen J, present.
Representative Cleavorn?
Present.
Representative Lippert?
Present.
Representative Lewick?
Lewick, present.
Representative Miller? Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Representative Thompson? We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Just as a reminder, this meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. We have minutes in front of us from the previous meeting. Vice Chair Vang, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of March 15, 2021.
Any questions or corrections on those minutes? Hearing none, seeing none, the motion prevail, or all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, the minutes are adopted. We have three bills up today. I expect some good discussion, particularly on two of them. I think my bill will take the least amount of time, so I'll go first and leave the remaining time for the other two bills. Vice Chair Vang, please assume the chair.
Okay, we have about 15 minutes blocked for this bill. Mr. Chair, please move your bill and begin.
Okay, House File 356, it's a temporary custom processors exempt from licensure and inspection requirements. I also have an author's amendment, but I will move the 356 be laid over for possible inclusion of the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. I also have the author's amendment. If you're ready, I will move the DE1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, please feel free to explain your DE1 amendment.
The one amendment, some questions were raised on the original bill about who and what this applied to. So this attempts to clarify, clearly establish an exemption from the custom exempt meat processing licensing and inspection laws and rules for certain individuals who process wild game. That's the garage guys. And it's the same goal, just a different approach. Dr. Nieser from the department might be available to talk about the specifics of that amendment if necessary.
Okay. Any discussion to the DE1 amendment? Okay. The DE1 amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. No other amendments were submitted, so Chair Sundin, please continue with your bill as amended, and we can hear from your testifiers. Reminder to testifiers that we have limited time, so please keep it brief and concise.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair Vang. We have Dan Larson. He's the executive director for the Minnesota Rural Counties up. He can weigh in on the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, a pleasure to be with you today. Dan Larson, Executive Director, Minnesota Rural Counties, 35 counties outside the Twin Cities metro area and the only organization to advocate specifically for rural county concerns. Pleasure to be with you this afternoon. The MRC board in the run-up to the session, a member brought this issue up. We hadn't heard of it before, but it was passed by unanimous consent as a priority issue for our organization. So in the interest of time, I'm just going to pretty much leave it at that. This is a culture and economy issue for Greater Minnesota and Rural County Commissioners. On the amendment, Mr. Chair, I had a chance to go over that yesterday evening. The one concern would be on the income cap, limiting gross sales to 15,000 or less in a calendar year. We see that as problematic. So supportive of the bill, the amendment as is, with the exception of the income limitation.
Okay. Mr. Chair, do you want to respond?
Not at this point. I think we could remedy that going forward. This is going to be laid over, and we have opportunity to work with Mr. Larson on this and maybe perfect it or bring it closer to his approval. Given that, I also have Kevin George and Brian Schatz. They're both wild game processors. So,
Mr. George, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Kevin George. I'm up in Park Rapids, Minnesota, and I'm considered the garage guy. And last 4 years, I've been doing it out of my garage, and every year I'm getting busier and busier as more custom meat processors refuse to take whole deer in. So I'm the middleman. I just skin them. I debone them. 90% of what I do goes back to the meat market where they make sausage, hamburger, whatever they want done with their deer. And by allowing me to continue to process deer, there's a lot of elderly people that come to me, people with disabilities, and people that just don't want to do their own deer. But we all know chronic wasting is getting to be a big issue in the state too. And you can't take a whole carcass across state lines. So last year I was having quite a few people from out-of-state residents, North Dakota, South Dakota. They couldn't find a meat processor to get their deer heart or deboned and stuff. So they would come to me, I would get a debone so they could cross the state lines. And also with the chronic wasting disease, when I'm doing it at my house and my garage, I have that carcass with me at all times. So when I'm done with it, I put it into a trailer, and then I'm able to take it to our landfill where they've got a deer carcass container. Otherwise, people are just throwing them on the sides of the roads. And at least here, I know that most of the deer that were shot stay in my county and stuff. And reading with this amendment and stuff, the only thing that I can see is problematic is that $15,000 cap. I haven't got there yet. I'm not that big. But if you put a limit at 15,000, 10 years from now, when the price of what I do goes up or my deer that I take in increases, I'm going to get there pretty soon. Because in my area, there used to be four custom meat markets that would take deer in every year. And now there's only one, and they cap it at 50 deer. So there's definitely a need for a guy like me to be out there so I can make sure that we get these deer processed the way they should be, taken care of, refrigerated, packaged, and handled correctly. So that's my story. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. George. Next testifier is Mr. Schatz. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Brian Schatz. Thank you for, first of all, foremost, thank you for having me on. I'm from Nicollet, Minnesota. I'm president of the Minnesota Association of Meat Processors. I've been on the board of directors for the past 8 years, working with them on a lot of different rules and regulations. One thing we feel, I guess, as far as this rule is put in place, the main reason this rule was put in place was for food safety. Safety is a concern of us processors that are making this into sausage. And I guess that $15,000 limit is about 150 deer. That's, to me, is quite a bit. If you're going with that 150 deer processing mark, I believe you should be under some type of inspection. And our board and our organization believes that too. So with that amendment, I think that's fair with the 15,000, but anything over that, I think, is going above and beyond. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Schatz. I don't see anyone else to testify, so we'll open this up for discussion, questions from members. Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question relates to the two testifiers in terms of one, CWD zones that may be near where they are processing, where the deer are coming from. Just how do they validate that the deer has been tested that that they are receiving? And then secondly, a question about lead. We've had more recent research that shows that with donated deer that have been processed, there's still lead in there, and just what their experience is with dealing with lead in the carcass.
Any testifiers who can answer this question, please state your name for the record.
Yeah, my name's Kevin George. As far as the chronic wasting thing, every deer that comes in has a certain zone that deer has been came from. In my area, we don't have chronic wasting in our area yet. So when they show up, I look at the tag, I see the zone they came out of. And if I believe right, you cannot take a deer out of a chronic wasting zone and bring it to a different processor. So it has to be processed in a chronic wasting zone, or that individual has to do it themselves. So you can't take that carcass across the chronic wasting zone. As far as lead goes, me being a garage guy, I cannot donate venison to a food shelf and stuff, but I do take extra protocol when I see where the shot was taken on the deer and work around that whole area. There's probably a lot more waste because of that, but I don't want lead going back to the hunter. So thank you.
Follow up, Representative Hansen.
If Mr. Schatz could maybe talk on behalf of the association.
Yes, as far as deer coming from chronic waste disease, I believe Mr. George is correct on that they're not allowed to take carcass, but they are allowed to take the trim with a tag saying that it was tested, and I believe it's supposed to be tested negative for them to take it out of that area to be processed for sausage making or hamburger or other types of things that the hunters would like to make. And as far as lead, That's another topic, I guess, that is important, to taking your time to make sure that you are processing everything correctly. Getting the lead bullets out of the deer is important. Just it's not going through your grinder plates, and that's where I believe the contamination is happening. It's in some type of the grinding process. How we can prevent that is just being careful and watching how we go through each piece of meat. So.
Representative Hansen.
Just a quick follow-up. So with the processes, I understand the garage dealing just with the deer, but with the other processors, are you segregating your deer and running those separately all in a batch and then cleaning things up prior to running cattle or hogs?
Mr. Schatz?
Yes. Yeah, so we, I guess in my facility, what we're doing is we stop processing of any retail products or custom. We do some custom processing, but that's done in a different area. So we're just working on strictly wild game for those 2 to 3 weeks. And then once we get past that, we start to freeze it. And then we kind of gear up after the first of the year. So we have time to do separation. Obviously, separation is important because you're dealing with retail products versus wild game products, which wild game is considered, could be considered a contaminant because it's not under full inspection.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I support the bill. Mr. George's testimony certainly tells us that there's a need out there for this type of work. So good bill, and enjoy the testimony. Common sense, they do a good job out there. So again, thanks to Chair Sundin, and it's a good bill and I support it.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, I just wanted to note that a fiscal note was completed and it showed an estimated fiscal impact of $8,000 per year. And seeing no further discussion, Chair Sundin, any closing comments before I lay the bill over?
Just a thank you to the testifiers. It's really good to know that there are people out there acting responsibly and involved in their industry at a different level as far as making policy and weighing in with the state of Minnesota. So, I thank them and the County Association for showing up and weighing in today. So this is an important issue in rural Minnesota. I appreciate these conversations, and it looks like we have a little bit of work to do maybe on the thresholds, but at this point, I would renew my motion that House File 356.
I'm not sure if it's just me, but the screen seems frozen.
Be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. Thank you. Back to the Chair Vang.
Chair Sundin, it looks like Vice Chair Vang is frozen up, so you might just want to...
I'll take over from here. Thank you, members, and House File 356 as amended is laid over. Okay, the next bill up is Vice Chair Vang. And if she is froze up for another few seconds, we would have to move on. Chair Vang, are you available? Okay.
If we can go to Representative Eklund.
Yep, working on it right here. Last bill up, or the second to last bill up, is House File 1727, Representative Eklund transferring CWD duties from the Board of Animal Health to the DNR. Let's keep in mind we have one more bill, so we don't have to run it into this evening. So, Chair Eklund, please move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I move House File 1727, First Engrossment, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy.
Okay. You have an author's amendment as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have the A3 amendment. This came out of the last committee stop. What it does is extends the fencing requirement by 1 year.
Okay, the A3 amendment is before us, and there's a motion to adopt. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The bill as amended is before us. Please tell us about your bill, and we'll open it up to testimony and questions. Chair Eklund. Would you like to introduce your testifiers?
I muted myself, Mr. Chair. I apologize.
Would you like to introduce your testifiers as, in the order that they will be speaking?
Mr. Chair, do you want me to talk about the bill first, or should we go right to testimony?
If you want, whatever your pleasure is, Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 1727 is a bill that makes changes in how the state of Minnesota interacts with farm survey industry on behalf of the citizens of Minnesota. It is decided to limit and control interaction between farm survey and the wild free-roaming herd. There are currently 4,397 farm whitetail survey in the state of Minnesota on 177 farms. Total numbers of farm survey in the state, whitetails included, is 8,307 animals on a total of 264 farms. These numbers are provided by the Board of Animal Health. I want to run a few numbers by before we go to our testifiers, Mr. Chair. Minnesota raises 17 million pigs per year, 39 million turkeys per year, 455,000 dairy cows per year, 345,000 beef cattle per year, 80,000 head of cattle are finished, and Minnesota raises 200,000 sheep and goats per year. There are currently 8,307 farm survey in Minnesota, and yet 20% of the staff time for the Board of Animal Health is spent on this farming endeavor. Mr. Chair, members, I think it's time that we move the control of the farm survey industry back to the DNR where it was originally taken from. With that, Mr. Chair, I will go to the testifiers.
Please introduce your testifiers as they choose to appear.
Well, first testifier is Tony Quillis from the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association, Mr. Chair.
They can all identify themselves for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tony Quillis, and I'm representing the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for allowing me the time today to make some comments on House File 1727. Mr. Chairman, in regards to Section 1, I just wanted to make the committee aware that the Board of Animal Health right now is currently undergoing a rulemaking process to update their rules in regards to farm servidae. And I think some of the concerns that are in Section 1 are addressed in that rulemaking, Mr. Chairman, specifically where it talks about an owner must immediately notify the Department of Natural Resources. The rules that are going forth by the Board of Animal Health also notice that the Board of Animal Health should be notified because they have the regulatory oversight over the farm servid program. Mr. Chairman, on page 2, there's two sections there that, in my opinion, are in conflict. The first paragraph talks about that a legally licensed hunter may kill and possess an escaped farm servidae in a lawful manner. In regards to elk, the only way lawfully that could be done is if it was done in Roseau or Kitson County between August and December would be the only way that you could do that. That being said, Mr. Chairman, if there was an escaped animal up there, we wouldn't be able to do paragraph 2, where we would have to test the animal because the hunter that shot the escaped animal kills it and now possesses it and could be gone with it, and we wouldn't be able to perform that test. One. Number two, Mr. Chairman, we want to be able to dictate what type of test there is. There's a number of tests. One of them would be what's known as the IHC test, which is the gold standard. And we'd like to be able to see if we could use that or what's known as the ELISA test. So we can't do that if the hunter is now down the road possessing that animal, Mr. Chairman. In regards to Section 2, the way I interpret it means that there must be double fencing of all elk facilities in the state of Minnesota. No other state has this requirement, Mr. Chairman, and it will result in a severe financial impact onto the folks I represent. Also, there's no clarification on what that second fence must be, whether it be shade cloth or electric or high tensile, Mr. Chairman. So I just wanted to point that out. In Section 6, there's discussion of moving from 5 to 10 years, the fencing requirement and not raising farm servid on a property. Incubation for CWD, according to the Department of Natural Resources, is 1 to 3 years. So I'm not sure what the science is, Mr. Chairman, moving from 5 to 10. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to spend some time on Section 8, which is the most concerning, Mr. Chairman. It is my opinion that the DNR doesn't have the capacity, the expertise, or the staff to carry out all the requirements that are put forth in those statutes and rules, and especially by August of 2021, Mr. Chairman. It includes inspection, record keeping, surveillance, trace outs, and certification of these herds. Elk are defined as livestock, just like cattle and hogs and turkeys. And livestock are regulated by the Board of Animal Health. And it is our belief, Mr. Chairman, that the regulation of elk should remain with the Board of Animal Health. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the time, and I'll stick around if there's any questions.
Thank you. Next testifier would be Craig Engwall. Please identify yourself and offer your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Craig Engwall. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. I am here to testify in support of the provisions of HF 1727. Minnesota is at a critical point in protecting our wild deer herd, the economic benefits that deer hunting brings to Minnesota, and the social importance of deer hunting to more than 500,000 deer hunters here in the state. For several years, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association has been on record in support of provisions that mirror the sections in this bill. The recent finding of 10 CWD positive deer on a farm in Houston County emphasizes the need for the provisions in this bill to be enacted now. The investigative tracing from that farm showed connections to farms in a number of counties, including Winona, Houston, Beltrami, Morrison, Stearns, and Clearwater. The Board of Animal Health's press release regarding that farm stated that, quote, 10 infected animals, despite an owner following all regulations, highlight why we need the research to catch up to the disease, end quote. Rather than research, Mr. Chair and members, the Houston County situation highlights why we need the regulations to change to address the situation in hand while we continue to improve the research on CWD. The bill before the committee does this, and MDHA enthusiastically supports it. To conclude, MDHA supports limitations on movement of animals, enhanced fencing to limit contact between farm cervids and wild deer, as well as a moratorium on new farmed deer herds. We also support the rest of the provisions in the bill. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I will stand by for questions should there be any for me. Thank you.
And next up, we have John Zandmiller. Please introduce yourself and continue with testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Zandmiller. I'm the Director of Community and Governmental Relations for Bluffland Whitetails. We support the changes that are being proposed in this legislation, finding it necessary to protect the wild whitetail population and possibly the public health. Farming of traditionally wild animals has created vectors for new diseases to be transmitted. In fact, a recent World Health Organization investigation revealed that the novel Corona 19 virus likely emerged from a wildlife farm in southwest China. Additional information on why we can support this is being echoed by written testimony that was submitted today by Amy Cordry. We think about the importance of preserving our natural heritage. We think about the opportunity to preserve a natural resource and a tradition of wild deer in Minnesota. We think that this is necessary for the preservation of our wild herd and hope that the House adopts this language. Thank you. I'll stand for questions if there are any.
Okay, thank you. Next up, we have Mr. Tim Sprecht with the Minnesota Deer Farmers. Please identify yourself and offer your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Tim Sprecht representing the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to edit as I go because I know we're short on time. I want to first focus on Section 1, which would allow hunters to kill and keep any escaped farm cervid. Mr. Chair, we're concerned about this section for the following reasons. It provides no exceptions when deer do escape through no fault of the owner. So for instance, a tree falls on a fence, there's a weather-related episode, and vandalism is another thing. And there are recorded cases where cervid farming operations have been vandalized and deer have been allowed to escape. Furthermore, Mr. Chair, this is something that doesn't happen with any other species of livestock, and the Ag Committee especially should be very concerned about this. Think of it in terms of other forms of livestock. If a cow escaped, if a goat escaped, if a sheep, turkey, etc. escaped, would you be comfortable with a licensed hunter being able to keep and possess that form of livestock? It also removes constitutional property rights. If a deer escapes and potentially through no fault of the owner, it could disappear, and some of these animals have significant value. So we're very concerned with that as well. Mr. Chair, section number 3, double fencing. This is kind of a solution in search of a problem. No other states do this. There are no recorded confirmed cases of any whitetail deer escaping over the current 8-foot fence. There's no science that shows any transfer of CWD prions through fence. And what it does, Mr. Chair, is it puts an exceptional financial burden on these farms. I talked to one individual who runs a breeding facility as well as a preserve, and he told me that his bill would be over $100,000 to re-equip with double fencing. Mr. Chair, the government is attempting to move the goalposts on these folks. When they develop their business model, they determine they can be profitable at a certain expense, and suddenly they're looking at $100,000 in additional expenses. Mr. Chair, this is going to put a significant amount of these operations out of business. Section number 5, no new farms allowed. No new farms really are the lifeblood of the industry, whether it comes from selling breeding stock or other services that are provided. It's a ripple effect throughout the community, and we're very concerned about this limitation. And it could potentially put other deer farmers out of business because of the lack of revenue. Section number 6, no movement of farm deer. This would preclude sales between farms or transport to any terminal hunt facility. So that puts essentially all of your preserves out of business, no sales to farms, and no movement of exhibition deer. So when you take your kids down to the wild or to the game fair or et cetera, wherever they have these displays, no exhibition deer. Mr. Chair, this also precludes movement of deer to slaughter. Deer could not even be removed from a facility and taken to slaughter. And finally, it would put many out of business because essentially what you would have is a population of livestock on a farm with nowhere to go. They would have to probably be euthanized because the feed costs alone would put these folks out of business. Section number 8, Mr. Chair, transfer to the DNR. In previous testimony, DNR has indicated they're not interested and they don't have any veterinarians on staff. Now, when this was heard in the Environment Committee recently, DNR indicated that they would simply just pick up the staff from the Board of Animal Health and move them over to DNR and it would be no problem, no duplication, et cetera. But please understand that a lot of these staff members have dual activities that they perform within the board. It doesn't mean that you can just pick up a veterinarian and remove them to the DNR without leaving some kind of a void. We believe that this would cause a lack of qualified staff within the DNR or within the Board of Animal Health as a result of this. And the most important on this point, Mr. Chair, these are livestock. This is defined as livestock. The ag community should take notice of this. If we're suddenly going to start a precedent where we're allowed to take livestock off of the farm and move them into control or oversight of the DNR, this is a very dangerous and concerning precedents. So, Mr. Chair, we've got constitutional property rights violations, we've got statutory taking without compensation, and we've got essentially the end of the cervid farming industry as a result of this legislation. So we do stand opposed, and thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to thank the testifiers. There are no other amendments submitted. There was a fiscal note completed, which had implications for both the Board of Animal Health and the DNR. Before we move along, I'd like to offer a couple of comments. The Board of Animal Health is a valued entity, and the work they do is critically important. As we've heard, the board has put in extensive effort on the issue of CWD, and to me, this bill isn't a reflection on the board whatsoever. I also recognize the elk and deer farmers who have made and continue to make efforts to keep herds safe and wild deer protected. Addressing CWD has been an extremely difficult challenge. It's not just about deer farmers and not just about deer hunters. It's something that has far-reaching consequences, and this bill is a new way to address them. I'm not a fan of some of the provisions in the bill, and I'm certain that Chair Eklund will take all these comments to heart. Like the prohibition on new registration and the 10-year restriction. I want to be clear that unless our target supports funding to ensure that this transfer will not detract from the board's ability to do their other mission critical work, I will reevaluate my support for this moving forward. With that, I'll open this for questions and comments from the author. First hand up, I'm just going to go across the top and start with Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Eklund, and thank you for that statement, Chair Sundin. I think, the motion is going to be to move it back into the Environment and Finance Committee at the end here, and the conversation will continue. The Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee in 2019 allocated money for the response in the Board of Animal Health. So there's been cross-jurisdictional funding that has occurred. Members, we're in the fourth year of an ongoing disease problem. This is, and I'm not talking about COVID. We our response to COVID has showed how we've had to deal with a human disease, but at the same time, the creeping chronic and wasting disease continues to move across our state and other states in the country. And we have spent significant amounts of money in the Department of Natural Resources and now in the Board of Animal Health attempting to get a handle on this. I praise Representative Eklund for moving assertively to try to resolve these problems. But I also want to note, in response to some of the testimony, I think Minnesotans can hear and see why not much has been done. Members, there is no cow season. Previous legislature made a mistake in moving CERVID jurisdiction from the Department of Natural Resources to the Board of Education. And there were people who commented that it was a mistake, and there were people who commented that this could happen when we were putting wild animals behind the fence. So the jurisdiction with the DNR doesn't have jurisdiction over cattle in terms of a wild cow season, but it does have jurisdiction over white-tailed deer, which over 450,000 Minnesotans and members outside the state are licensed to hunt. And that cost, the public cost, is huge. So we need to take action. There has been little action taken on the fundamental structure of the Board of Animal Health and how to deal with it. And the answer is always never change anything ever. Let's just let the public cost increase and increase and increase. So it's time to move. Is this perfect? Chair Sundin, we'll continue to have the conversation to make this better. And I think we can have a good product because it is time to actually act.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. We've have a few other hands up here as well. If you limit yourself to one question each, so if we have extra time after, we can revisit some of your concerns. Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be quick. Being on the Ag Committee, yes, I'm very concerned about this new regulation here, or possible regulation about allowing escape animals to be taken by a hunter with no compensation to the farmer. That is a big thing with the livestock defined by livestock in Minnesota. I don't really favor that. The other thing concerned about, we've talked about this for years. I realize CWD is a very big problem, but I wonder if eliminating the CERVID deer farms is going to eliminate CWD. I really doubt it. I'd like to hear some testimony on the number of positives taken in the wild herd this past year. We heard about those taken in the CERVID farms, but I'd like to hear discussion of that as well. I'm not sure the 10-foot high fence is needed. We haven't heard the testimony that's an issue with the deer jumping over or whatever, crawling over an 8-foot fence, and that the double fencing is a financial hardship. I appreciate the extension of time for that by Representative Eklund, but again, that also is a financial drawback to the farms. And my last concern is the moratorium on new farms. We have heard this in past years, and at that time it even forbid the father passing on the operation to his son. So it's an effective death knell to the operation. Not sure how that language would react this time around, but a lot of issues with the bill, realizing there are problems with CWD, it's a big problem. Would like to see more discussion on this and to hear from the Board of Animal Health as well, but to get their feelings on this major change contemplated, Mr. Chair. That's it.
Representative Chair Eklund, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson. I'm certainly willing to work with whoever is willing to talk to me about these issues. I've heard from both elk farmers and deer farmers about the 10-foot fence issue. I'm very much willing to have discussions and see if we can make this this bill better as we go forward.
Okay, next up we have a question or concern from Representative Miller, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and as requested, I'll be brief. I just want to make a couple quick comments. I'm disappointed a bill like this would be coming into Ag Committee. I've always viewed Ag Committee as, first of all, bipartisan on most issues, and also something that builds up and supports agriculture. And I don't think we have to do that in contradiction with wild deer. I don't think these bills that come forward with the Farm Survey keep putting them in opposition, and I don't see that. My one comment on the DNR taking over the reins on this, my experience has been that the DNR has difficulty managing the assets and the responsibilities that they have now, and to put something like this on them, I just believe they wouldn't be able to step up to the responsibilities necessary to do to the great work that the Board of Animal Health does. I do look forward. We'll see how this changes as it goes into Chair Hansen's committee. I probably won't see it again until it gets on the House floor. I look forward to a very vigorous debate if it looks like this when it gets to the House floor. Thank you.
Chair Eklund, any response for Representative?
I'll wait for my close. I'll take Representative Miller's comments under advisement.
Thank you. Representative Lewick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've got, two areas here that I think really need to be fleshed out a little more. And first of all, let's be accurate on the history of chronic wasting disease in Minnesota. I think the comment was we've been in a battle with this for 4 years. That's about 20 years off. If you look at the reason why the DNR lost authority to manage these Cervidae farms, you go back to when we first discovered chronic wasting disease in elk. And many of the provisions you see today were as a result of that after the DNR had relinquished their role and the Board of Animal Health was responsible then to manage all the Cervidae farms. So you know, over time, we've and knock on wood, we literally have not had any recent issues with elk farms and chronic wasting disease, and that is because of the six-level system that requires constant testing of any animals that die. So let's not go back and undo the progress we made by just handing this thing back over to the DNR, because when you start looking at the actual hard assets, the DNR is going to get a couple of FTEs, and that's about it. It's easy to say that 20% of the current resources right now may be focused on chronic wasting disease, but guess what? If we get another significant animal disease in the state, you'll see 100% of the assets move. So that's an issue. The other one is, my goodness sakes, we have got 8 pages of work on rules updates that the Board of Animal Health has been working on, and the citizens, the deer hunters. In fact, I am a life member of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. Everybody's been at the table working on those rules, trying to get them up to date. A lot of the things in Representative Eklund's bill are paralleled in those rules. And I would just urge that we slow this train wreck down, because that's exactly where you're headed if you hand responsibility over to the DNR again, and they're gonna have to figure out how to do this. We can't lose any time on continuing to pursue chronic wasting. So I certainly don't support this as is. But if we can look a lot more like the rules that are in progress right now, as opposed to this legislation, then maybe we can make some progress. Again, I thank Representative Eklund. This has been a tough bill to, this is a buck and bronco, and I appreciate the hard work on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any other questions from the committee for the author to the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Final comments: it is not the intention of this legislation to stop farm survey operations, but the intention is to try to clean up the operations that are not functioning well with our wild deer herd. There are currently 8,307 farms surveyed in Minnesota, and by the Board of Animal Health's own testimony, 20% of their staff time is focused on this. Mr. Chair, members, it's time to move jurisdiction back to the DNR so the Board of Animal Health can focus its efforts where needed, making sure that Minnesota is producing the products needed to keep the state fed. I ask for the chair and the members' support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Eklund.
Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion that House File 1727, First and Growth, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Natural Environment and Natural Resources.
Okay, thank you all for the discussion. The motion is before us. Mr. Smith, please call the vote.
Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. Vice Chair Vang.
Aye.
Vang, aye. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Anderson, no. Representative Burkle.
Burkle, no.
Burkle, no. Representative Eklund.
Yes.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen, aye.
Hansen R, yes.
Hansen R, aye. Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J, yes.
Hansen J, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Representative Lewick.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Representative Miller.
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Thompson. Thompson? All right. I'm seeing eight ayes, four noes, or five nays.
Was it 8-5, did you say?
Correct.
Okay. On a vote of 8-5, the motion prevails, and the bill, as amended, is on to its next step. Thank you, Chair Eklund. Good luck in hopefully working out some of the details as you move along. That said, we have time to revert to the previous bill that was up. Representative Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize earlier. Somehow my connection got disconnected.
Nothing to apologize for. I swear to God, I've got two laptops going on a phone and I'm barely hanging on as far as communications go.
This is the life we're in now. I move House File 718, First Engrossment, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance and Policy. Mr. Chair, I also have an author's amendment. I like to move to get the bill in the shape that I like to present it.
Okay, move the amendment then, please.
I move the A21 amendment.
Okay, describe the amendment, please.
This is just a simple amendment. It just adds another exemption with relating to wood preservatives.
Any questions from the committee on the DE1 amendment? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Say nay. Okay, hearing none, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. No other amendments are submitted. Skipped over to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 718 is a bill that reflects what Minnesotans want when we think about our outdoors, fresh air, fresh smells, beautiful scenery. And although this doesn't come to mind immediately, but requires it chemical-free. This bill adds a narrow exemption that if a city passes an ordinance, it can tell its residents that they cannot use the pesticides that are on the list maintained by the Department of Agriculture. As Minnesotans, we pride ourselves in our outdoors as the land of 10,000 lakes. Our deer, birds, and fish are all part of who we are. This bill will help migrating birds. About 74% of bird species in North America that rely on the farm belt habitat have suffered population decline since 1966. Science tells us that migrating songbirds exposed to very small amounts of neonicotinoid pesticides will have a weight loss and migration delays. Both reduce their chance of surviving. This bill will help fish. Science also tells us that neonics have a widespread negative impact on aquatic insects and invertebrates. both are food for fish. This bill will help deer. Recent science tells us that neonics are likely cause of birth defects in deer and are found in spleens and reproductive organs of deer. And this bill will help mayflies. They are particularly susceptible to neonics. Since 2012, mayfly populations have declined by 52% in the northern Mississippi River Basin. Mayflies are, of course, food for a wide variety of species, from freshwater fish to birds and bats. And one last thing, LCCMR funded a butterfly survey to see how they are doing in Minnesota. Of the 13 native butterflies surveyed, they could not find 7 of the native butterflies in on sites. We all know that pollinators play a critical role in our food supply. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that the value of insect pollination to U.S. farm is about $16 billion a year, with a third of our food relying on pollinators. I hope you will vote for this bill that provides a safe place for bees and butterflies and all sorts of other critters that makes our great outdoors the place we want it to be. And with that, Mr. Chair, I do have a few testifiers would like to speak in support of the bill.
Okay, great. I see a half a dozen testifiers. If we can move along briskly with a couple of minutes each, we'll have some time for questions. Lori Schneider, please identify yourself and offer your testimony.
Okay, thank you for your time and attention. I am speaking in support of the bill HF 718 to allow local control of pesticides. I'm Lori Schneider. I run a Minnesota regional conservation organization called Pollinator Friendly Alliance. Our membership is from all over Minnesota. We are the boots on the ground working close with communities to create healthy environments for not just pollinators, but birds, wildlife, and people too. We know firsthand how important healthy communities are to people, not just because a healthy environment increases property values, but now more than ever when people are at home because of the pandemic, they're in their yards and local communities focusing efforts on their schoolyards and their local parks and wanting those to be healthy too. We believe in community intelligence. These are smart, organized, and motivated people who want to do the best in their local communities. They're informed and they seek out current science to make good choices, evidenced by the overwhelming attendance we have experienced for our ecology and citizen science programs. Just last week, there were 1,500 land managers from state, county, and local agencies and private landscape businesses who attended our best practices summit 3 days in a row to learn how to use sustainable, ecologically sound land management practices and how to reduce pesticide use instead of defaulting to pesticides. We know firsthand Minnesotans are asking for this and want clean water, clean land, and a clean food source. And they have the intelligence and motivation to make the right choices in their own communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. I'm going to remind the next five testifiers that you just have actually under 2 minutes each to offer your testimony. So we have a few minutes left for questions. So Aaron C. Rupp, please identify yourself and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Rep. Bang, for authoring this important legislation, to all the co-authors, and to you, Chair Sundin, and members of the committee for hearing this bill and allowing me to testify today. Can you hear me?
Yes, please continue.
Cool. Okay. I'm speaking in support of this bill. My name's Erin Roop. I'm the ED and founder of the education and advocacy organization Pollinate Minnesota. I served on Governor Dayton's Committee for Pollinator Protection. I've been active in state and local pollinator policy here in Minnesota since 2013. You haven't seen me much this session because I have a one-month-old who you may be able to hear. I keep around 25 colonies. I'm a small-scale beekeeper. In 2013, I experienced an acute hive loss. The foraging bees in our hive in Minneapolis and two others in the neighborhood died overnight from a legal pesticide exposure. And since that time, gaining control over the ability to protect pollinators like my bees from pesticide death has been a priority of the city of Minneapolis. as it is a growing number of Minnesota cities. A clause in Minneapolis's 2015 pollinator-friendly resolution states that, be it further resolved, that the city will continue to advocate at the state and federal level for increased authority to address the non-agricultural use of pesticides. That was 6 years ago. In writing this testimony and reading it to you now, I feel increasingly devastated by 2 points that I have, every year since 2013, come into my bee yards in the city and the country to find hives with both acute and chronic pesticide exposure deaths. Everyone does. Here in Minnesota, beekeepers continue to lose, on average, 50% of our colonies. I got off the phone this morning with Minnesota commercial beekeeper Steve Ellis. He's lost 71% of his operation between the summer and this January. Embedded in these lost numbers is the incredible additional labor and expertise beekeepers are doing to maintain lost numbers that small. Brett Ade is the largest commercial beekeeper in the country with around 80,000 colonies in the summer. He likes to say, in response to the question why bees are declining, it's not like every beekeeper in the U.S. forgot how to keep bees all at once. The same is true for pesticide applicators. People didn't all forget how to do their jobs all at once. Experts are applying according to label, yet pollinators are exposed and dying. Which brings me to my second point. After years of data of experts, not like me with my 20 hives and education nonprofit, but like Brett with his 80,000 hives and 3 generations of experience, we are still talking about the law, the pesticide label, as if it's protective, as if legal applications are not a driver of these exposures and declines. They are. Yet our Minnesota Department of Ag in 2021 is proposing the same solutions as in 2014, more education. In the MDA's 2021 budget, they've proposed nearly doubling the pesticide registration fee, which I support, have long recommended along with many others, but they're proposing part of it fund 2 new urban pesticide education positions.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Can I ask you to wrap it up?
Yep, I am. How will a better understanding of an unprotective labor result in better protections? We're still here because the global neonic market generated $4.2 billion in revenue in 2018, and it's clear that the EPA and MDA need to shift. And in the meantime, let's pass Representative Vang's bill, which offers smaller scale protection cities should have access to if they choose. So I voice my strong support, and I thank you for including my testimony today.
Thank you very much. Next up is Rob Greer. Please identify yourself and continue being mindful that we have a few other testifiers.
I'm Rob Greer from Rural Pest Control here on behalf of the Minnesota Pest Management Association. Thank you for having us and for your service to our state. We applaud your efforts to protect pollinators. Our industry knows pollinator importance and protects them too. Unfortunately, House File 718 has some unintended consequences you might not have been aware of. Pests bite, sting, contaminate, and spread disease. We prevent pest infestations many ways, including timely treatments outside structures. If tools are taken away and we can't prevent pests outside, this creates the unintended consequence of increased use of pesticides inside homes and businesses near people and pets. Structural pest control is unlikely to pose a threat to pollinators, as illustrated in a recent Cornell University study on neonicotinoid pesticides. The bill exempts the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District, but that they only cover the metro. Our industry covers the entire state, stopping mosquitoes and ticks that spread various diseases such as Lyme's disease. An increase of disease is another unintended consequence. The updated termite treatment policy for FHA mortgages applies to 64 of Minnesota's 87 counties. HF 718 would remove necessary tools to meet requirements. We need an exemption to use pesticides around foundation structures for carpenter ants and termites to protect the real estate industry from this unintended consequence. What impact will up to 853 cities making their own rules have? In Crystal, for example, parts of the city don't even touch other parts of the city. Can you imagine trying to know what to do at one house, but across the street, you have to do something completely different? None of the 853 cities have the expertise nor lab equipment that the MDA has and is needed to regulate our industry. In fact, another legislation, MBA is requesting funding for more lab equipment, and we support that legislation. In summary, our industry is committed to protecting pollinators. Labels already provide that protection, and we must follow the label. Giving 853 cities the ability to come up with their own rules won't save pollinators, but it will have unintended consequences that are significant. Thank you for your time.
Representative Vang, I think the Chair, Sundin is frozen up.
Okay. Next testifier we have is John Gaeta. Mr. Gaeta, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. John Gaeta, testifying on behalf of RISE, Chairman Sundin, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on HF 718, a bill which would erode pesticide preemption in Minnesota. RISE, Responsible Industry for a Sound Environment, is the national trade association which represents the manufacturers, formulators, and distributors of specialty pesticides and fertilizers. Our industry strongly opposes this legislation, and we ask that you vote no today. Pesticides are regulated at both the federal and state level. In Minnesota, the Department of Agriculture is responsible for testing, reviewing, and authorizing the use of pesticides within the state. This system works because highly trained and educated regulators have the know-how and resources to regulate pesticides. This bill would allow 800 cities plus in Minnesota to regulate bee toxic insecticides, which would completely undermine the authority of the state. Recently, RISE conducted a study of 1,000 adults in the U.S. and asked them their opinions about how pesticides are regulated. The results were staggering. 80% of respondents agreed that the current way pesticides are regulated by the federal EPA and in conjunction with a one state regulatory body was the proper way to manage pesticides. Essentially, if it isn't broke, we should not fix it. The Department of Agriculture registers pesticides, licensed pesticide applicators, they conduct research on pesticides, and they are responsible for enforcement activities. Uniform state law ensures that pesticides are labeled correctly and that there is clear understanding on how to distribute, sell, store, transport, use, and dispose of pesticides. Allowing cities the authority to regulate pesticides would be a disaster for this state. As our country continues to emerge from this pandemic, I can't think of a worse way to put new monetary burdens on local governments. We must remain confident in the science and respect the regulatory framework that already exists in this state. In addition to my testimony today, I've submitted written comments for the record. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify on this bill.
All right, thank you, Mr. Gaeta. Next testimony is Tim Maloney. Mr. Maloney, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Vice Chair Vang, Chair Sundin, and members of the House Agriculture and Finance Committee. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. My name is Tim Maloney. I'm a volunteer currently serving as the president of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. And I'm also a U.S. EPA WaterSense partner, and I hold several Minnesota licenses in various disciplines. I will shorten my testimony as much as I can. The Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association respectfully opposes House File 718. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture is best equipped to acquire the latest and best science and information to effectively regulate the sale, use, and review of pesticide and herbicide products in Minnesota. The products in question are important tools in our collective toolbox, if you will, to combat harmful pests, including emerald ash borer and other pests that pose significant threats to Minnesota's natural resources. Enabling local governments to decide on the use or restriction of the products in question will not only limit the ability of licensed applicators to effectively combat harmful pests, but will result in a confusing, inefficient patchwork of actions and unintended consequences that can adversely affect public health and safety and that of our environment. While MNLA opposes HF 718, our association applauds the desire of the bill sponsors and the committee to protect pollinators. The approach contemplated by HF 17 is not a workable approach. We're an industry that supports efforts to protect and establish robust pollinator habitats while also keeping in mind the health and safety of Minnesotans and the entirety of our outdoor environment. We'd like to consider our industry as constructive participants in these matters, and we hope you will call on us at any time to contribute. Thank you.
Okay, next up, I guess, would be Darren Macbeth. Please identify yourself and continue with testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Darren Macbeth with Lathrop GPM Law Firm representing CropLife America. Even though this bill tries to focus on non-agriculture use of pesticide and registered pesticide products, I still wanted to weigh in on behalf of CropLife America and associate myself with John Gaeta's testimony from RISE and Rob Greer's testimony from the Pest Management Association, as well as MNLA's testimony just prior. Two quick points, not to be overly repetitious, but the subject matter of preemption and exclusive regulation of complex regulatory matters by the federal and state government in this case is very important, and the precedent to pierce through preemption to allow cities to ban certain registered pesticide uses would be highly controversial and is redundant and not needed. Again, and to also give them, as the bill does, enforcement and penalty authority goes even further in the wrong direction. And the second point I wanted to make in terms of the Environmental Protection Agency's registration of products under FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, it has a lot of integrity and a lot of rigor that the Department of Agriculture and Departments of Agriculture from state to state support. And to carte blanche create a new definition, a misnomer definition of lethal pollinator pesticides, when an EPA registered product may simply have a precautionary statement or a warning that advises on how a label, how a product should be used in accordance with the label to minimize impacts around bees or pollinators, and to take that to say it's a lethal pollinator pesticide and to allow cities to ban it is just a stretch too far. So I'll conclude there, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Mr. McBeth. I froze up there and lost track a little bit. Did Tim Maluli have an opportunity to speak?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, I did.
Okay, thank you. That completes the list of testifiers there. In addition to the testimony that we received here, please note that the Minnesota Pest Management Association and the Household and Commercial Products Association submitted testimony in opposition, and the Pollinator Friendly Alliance, City of Minneapolis, League of Minnesota Cities and Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, and Hummingbird Bees submitted written testimony in support for your perusal. Are there any questions to the witnesses or the author? We have a total of 45 seconds for questions. I see Paul Anderson's hand up first, I think it was. Representative Anderson. Might be frozen up. Representative Lewick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say we've had some excellent testimony on reasons why this is probably not quite ready for prime time. And I appreciate the author's work on this. We all value the pollinators, I in particular, because of the forage I grow, clover and alfalfa. It's a critical part of what I do. But I think we need to look at this in a lot more detail. I think we're just a little early out of the chute here and get the Department of Ag much, much more involved in this, as they are the licensing authority for the folks that actually do these practices. So with that, I'll just say I can't support this bill as it's written right now, but I appreciate the author's effort to deal with protecting our pollinators.
Thank you, Representative Luke. I'm going to skip over to Representative Anderson for a quick question.
Try it again, Mr. Chair. Hopefully you hear me. This bill seems to come back every year. And again, don't quite understand the need for it. The League of Cities and the City of Minneapolis say they support the bill, but yet they wouldn't make any changes without conferring with the Department of Agriculture. But that's who's in charge of it right now. I'm not quite sure why they'd want to change that and to get into rulemaking, penalty enforcement, those types of things. And just one quick question for the author. Again, when this bill came up in prior years, it talked about applying only to cities of the first class. This time around, it says applying to statutory and home rule charter cities. How many cities to the bill author would that apply to? Mr. Representative Vang, if she'd answer a question.
But Vice Chair Vang, a response?
Mr. Chair, this bill doesn't add any cities. It just gives permissions for cities to create an ordinance on regulating pesticides. If you want to know more about in cities who are interested, there has been growing interest in cities developing a more pollinator-friendly habitat, and I think that's about 44 cities out of the 853 cities.
So okay. This does not apply statewide, Representative, correct?
Representative Hank?
Mr. Chair, so this just allows cities to create an ordinance. So it is statewide, but of the cities that are interested in creating more pollinator-friendly habitats, it's about 44 cities who have done, I believe, resolutions to support pollinators.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, we're running down to seconds here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is coming my way, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I would ask the testifiers to provide in writing their opinion on Section 18B.03, powers and duties of the Commissioner, Subdivision 3, delegation to approve agencies. So that is ready if it passes out of this committee and into the environment.
Thank you. Duly noted. Representative Vang renews her motion that House File 718, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy. Mr. Smith, please call the vote.
Chair Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin votes aye. Vice Chair Vang?
Aye.
Vang votes aye. Representative Anderson?
Anderson, no.
Anderson, no. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, no.
Burkle, no. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen, R?
Hansen, R, aye.
Hansen, R, aye. Representative Hansen, J?
Hansen, J, aye.
Hansen, J, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Thompson?
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. That's 8 ayes and 5 nays.
8-5?
Correct.
Okay, on a vote of 8-5, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is on to its next stop. Thank you, Vice Chair Vang and testifiers. I thank the committee for moving along briskly and getting as many voices heard as possible. We are adjourned.